VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello and welcome to The Game. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I'm here with the latest opinion and analysis from The Times. Here to discuss tributes, retirements, handshakes, discipline, chanting, language, maybe even some football. It's Tony Evans, it's Rory Smith, and from beautiful Warrington, it's James Ducker. Later, we're going to go all moral maze on you, and the panel will be discussing what counts as banter and what's just plain offensive. But let's start at Anfield. It looked to me like Liverpool had the upper hand for much of the game. Brendan Rodgers certainly felt that way. So if you're a Liverpool fan, results aside, is your glass half full right now?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, it's not about being on top, it's about getting the points. And, you know, there's not enough goals in that team. It's all right playing good football. It's all right saying, oh, we were the better side. As you know, the Americans have a saying, scoreboard, dude. And, you know, they got beat. And, you know, I can't see them scoring a lot of goals. And I can't see them picking up that many points. I think they've got problems. And, you know, people are saying to me all the time, oh, God, look at the foundations. Oh, the passing. As if Liverpool have never passed a bloody ball before. You know, it's they're not passing in dangerous areas. They're not hurting people. And they're getting beat by teams they shouldn't get beat by. And one of them was Manchester United yesterday.
Ducker, do you subscribe to that Liverpool should not have been beaten by Manchester United? At least, yeah, the version of United we saw yesterday.
No, I mean, you know, the teams are very different kind of junctures. But I mean, I thought United were extremely relieved probably that Liverpool were down to 10 men, because I just could not see them overcoming, you know, Brendan Rodgers' team. You know, 11v11. I thought Liverpool were on top, and I thought even in the second half they did pretty well, you know, considering the numerical disadvantage. So I just think it's a bit difficult to draw, you know, too much judgment when they've lost against you know, with 10 men to a team that are going to have a good stab at winning the title. Brendan Rodgers is going to get a it's a difficult position that he's in now. My one slight kind of criticism is that he's obviously got a forward there in Luis Suarez who is a very kind of very very capable playmaker, but isn't a prolific goal scorer or kind of a ruthless finisher. And I just kind of watching kind of Barini, I mean, I know he had a very decent goals record for Roma last season, but kind of watching him, I just don't know whether he's that kind of, and I might be wrong, it's very early days, that kind of lethal marksman that he needed. And I just wonder whether the priority really should have been to use that 10 million or so that they had to try and get a more of an out-and-out goal scorer than a Barini figure who to me maybe looks, you know, more of a kind of less of an out-and-out goal scorer.
I think the plan would, if you did get an out-and-out goal scorer, you would have had to move Suarez to the wing, which may or may not be something you didn't want to do. But out-and-out goal scorer, perhaps we've got Stephen Fletcher's biggest fan right here in Rory. Do you buy that? I mean, it's an old argument we've made with Brendan Rodgers and lack of a cutting edge, but more broadly speaking, these are the guys he has: Barini, Suarez, Raheem Sterling. Is he doing a good enough job of making that front three work?
I think the days of supply dependent goal scorers are probably over. Like you'd look at players like even like Huntelaar, who's a really sort of old fashioned centre forward in that sense.
Whoa! Time out. Supply dependent
centre forwards who
goal scorers.
Centre forwards who do nothing but score goals are old fashioned. You can't have them. You've got to have a more rounded.
Etc. Yeah, no, take your point.
Van Nistelrooy, Inzaghi, they're old fashioned players. Have to contribute more. That Raul. Fowler, they are players.
Tony's
of an
making
era.
A face. He's our boss. Let him speak.
This is the game's changed. What a load of old tosh! If you had a Van Nistelrooy now, you put him in that team and he'd score goals. Get the ball to him. That's what you do.
But would you get the ball to him as much as does Liverpool create a lot of chances? But they create a lot of chances because they've got players around the box. You take one of them out to put a poacher in, then you're going to create less chances. It's simple.
They're not scoring goals. You're saying, oh, they'll create less chances. And if they were scoring goals, if the goals were coming by a shed load, you go, oh, they're creating chances. Great, they're scoring goals. They're not scoring bloody goals. Get a poacher. He'll score goals.
And who'd you take out for the poacher?
I don't bloody know. I'm not Brendan bloody Rodgers. That's what he's paid for. But I'll tell you what. I'd take out Barini. And I'll tell you what. Raheem Sterling's too young to be playing every week. I'd take him out.
Jonjo Shelvey you could take out before he gets himself sent off.
Both of the statements Tony's just made, I agree with. I think Barini to me looks, and I agree with James on that as well, Barini to me looks like a younger Dirk Kuyt. And I think there were £10 million that they had to spend there that could have been spent on someone, not necessarily who's a more prolific striker, but someone who's got more experience.
Is it a worry there specifically because, and not to pick on Brendan, we will move on to in a minute, but this idea that, I mean, Brendan Rodgers was in charge of the transfer market, right? He signed Joe Allen and Barini, who are two guys he has worked with before,
yeah,
and he knows inside and out. So, yeah, I don't mean it in that way.
Yeah.
But that being the case, you have to guess that this is exactly what he wanted. And it's fine for you to say, you know, we could have gone for more traditional striker type or whatever. But presumably these guys fit perfectly with Brendan's vision. Otherwise, you know, he can't come back and say, oh, I thought Barini was going
to
be different.
Yeah, Allen and Barini seem to be two that he specifically wanted. And my question,
Because he knows them. He's worked with them before. It's not like they tricked him. Right?
The argument is that Rodgers didn't have enough money and that FSG screwed him out of money and what have you and didn't put up the funds for Dempsey. I'm not sure that Dempsey was the player Liverpool needed, to be perfectly honest anyway, although I do like Dempsey as a player. But what stuns me is partially that Rodgers, even if he didn't think he was going to get the Liverpool job, he must have had players he was looking at for Swansea who would have cost a certain amount of money that he could have got instead of paying £15 million, which is a lot for Joe Allen, or £10 million for Barini. But he didn't have them. He'd say the scouting network wasn't in place. He should have those targets himself. Right. A manager will know players. Yeah, and that troubles me to an extent. And then he gambles by letting Carroll go out on loan. FSG cop all of the blame. That was Rodgers' decision to let Carroll go.
All down to Rodgers.
And he deserves a degree of whatever the opposite of credit is for that.
Moving on from Rodgers. Oh, and by the way, sorry, let me just diverge back to the supply-dependent goal scorer. I remember the centre-forward for the team that was in the final of the Champions League and lost it on penalties. 40-plus goals last season.
Yeah.
Is he maybe teeny tiny bit supply dependent?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Okay, good. Just wanted to check on that we're on the same page.
And he's old fashioned.
And he's old fashioned, yes, okay.
Goals are old fashioned now. Yeah, you know what? Pass completion's the new winning.
Well, but Tony, it has been scientifically proven that if you have a 60% possession rate coupled with a pass completion rate of 75%,
I'm calm. I can fight on. I know where I am.
All right, somebody who was a bit less calm was Jonjo Shelvey. You could say this was a turning point in the game. Jonjo Shelvey goes in on Evans. It struck me as the kind of thing that a referee could have sent them both off. He could have done nothing. He could have sent one or the other off based on the angle. I questioned why you would go to ground in that situation, what you hope to get from that. But let's start with, I mean, Ducker, you're impartial here. Did they get the decision right with Shelvey? Okay, so all right. I will take your hesitation as the fact that nobody has a strong opinion on whether the Shelby decision was right or wrong, yes?
I mean, like you, I don't think you should be giving the referee the opportunity to get it wrong in those situations. There was nothing to be gained by going to ground there. You know, I just think it's daft from the player. It's a bad decision by the referee. You see it happen all the time.
You're saying nothing, Royce. I'm assuming you agree with our boss, right?
Yeah, well,
and your boss too.
I agree with Tony as a matter of principle. No, I think it's kind of two arguments, aren't there? The Shelby decision, I think, was probably on just about right, given the state of the rules. The decision not to send Evans off or to give him any sort of punishment is what Rogers seems to be objecting to. The problem I have is I don't know if the rules are right. I don't know if the rules are as they should be.
I agree with that.
Well, that's the point you've made. But I mean, in this day and age, though, the reality is John Joe Shelby is a professional footballer. And
oh yeah, it's
he's
stupid.
Coaching.
You can't deny that. Yeah.
Now, what about afterwards when he goes off the pitch and shouts at Sir Alex? I believe what was reported was he accused him of grassing him up, which I just want to be clear on this, since you guys are more au fait with the Anglo vernacular. I thought grassing somebody up was sort of, you know, spying on somebody and reporting them to the authorities sneakily. Mm. What did Sir Alex communicate sneakily with the chip? And
clearly, the referee didn't see it, and Ferguson, you know, grassed him up.
Right. And Ferguson told him, like, oh, by the way, send Shelby off.
Clearly.
He looks funny. Get rid of him.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Wasn't the referee actually looking directly at the incident at the time, though? I'm sure Halsey was looking directly at Shelby and Evans.
But if that was true, Shelby would look stupid, wouldn't he?
When the incident happened.
Okay, all right. Let's. I just want to say, anybody think Shelby will get more punishment? Because ultimately, a guy shouting at a manager as he walks off the pitch, it's one thing to lose your cool with the referee, but isn't exactly ideal for the image of the game. Anybody think he should or will get more punishment?
He shouldn't, because football's obsession with punishing people for having personality is pathetic and childlike. And this idea that players are getting, Szabolcs Szwiszty getting sent off for Hanover for taking his shirt off is ridiculous.
Okay, you make any more references to footballers that only I have heard of, and you will be punished yourself.
No,
okay?
Do you know what? I couldn't think of anybody else who's been sent off for taking their shirt off recently.
Did you notice I pronounced it correctly as well?
Exactly.
Okay, for those who do not know, I'm not going to ask you to Google him because his name's impossible to spell, but this is a striker for Hanover. 2 weeks ago, he scores the winner in like the 93rd minute in their big derby against Werder Bremen, and then he goes off to celebrate, whips off his shirt so he gets booked the first time, and then jumps into the crowd to celebrate with the fans. This was like the last kick of the game. It was an overhead kick, and the referee says, aha, yes, two infractions, okay, two yellows, you're gone, and suspension. Okay.
But leaving aside that,
we're not doing the Bundesliga podcast from a week ago, so.
But what's incredibly irritating is football has this weird obsession with punishing all these little pernickety things. Yeah, Shelby shouldn't have had a go at Ferguson, but who cares?
Yeah,
who's
well,
offended
I
by
mean,
it?
You know, it was funny. You know, it's like, you know, as he was walking off, I'm going, yeah, go ahead, tell him.
Is it funny to you when people disrespect Sir Alex? Do you find it funny?
He shouldn't have done it, clearly, but he shouldn't be punished by it.
I just don't really have strong opinions either way, but I think the idea of landing kind of John Joe Shelby extra punishment because he dared to have a mouthful at Sir Alex Ferguson is absolutely ridiculous. I think far worse is some of the abuse that's been directed at Halsey since, you know, a lot of taunts about his obviously his battle with cancer, and I just think that's far more beyond the pale.
Actually, let's give props to Raphael scoring with his wrong foot. He'd scored one goal since 2009.
Is it his wrong foot, or is that actually Fabio?
Yeah, there you go. That was a layup.
Yeah, and well, there's the other issue. Footballers have them wrong feet.
Yeah, that's a fair point, that.
You know.
Well, you're ambidextrous.
Well, they should be. I mean, what have they got to do all day except train?
My dad is... loves Ryan Giggs, but is furious every time he sees Giggs switch onto his left to play when he should be playing on his right, because he said quite rightly Giggs has been training every day for 30 years. Has no one at any point thought saying, Ryan, maybe spend a couple of hours on your right? It's pathetic.
I agree. I mean, even a player of that kind of quality and stature who's done it for that long, it's still bizarre that he looks so ineffectual when the ball's on his right foot. I just think it should be a basic requirement of the professional that they. I'm not saying that they'd be absolutely wonderful with 2 feet, but you would think that they'd be able to use their so-called wrong foot effectively.
Look, I still think it was a nice goal from Rafael, and I think he meant to do that, and I'm just trying to celebrate this young lad, and you think it's Fabio. There you go. So he's a fraud. Tucker, one question I had for you, which struck me. Nemanja Vidic didn't start, and I don't have any inside intel on this, but I read and I heard on television that he was merely being rested, that there's nothing wrong with him. And I'm wondering, rested for what? Rested for the League Cup in midweek?
There's no rocket science. It's just nonsense. He was injured, which is why he didn't play. He's got a knee injury, which is going to make him a doubt for Spurs, although I'll be able to ascertain a little later how serious that is. But if it's the same knee that he suffered a triple rupture of last December, then who knows how serious it is. It might just be a bang and he's a doubt for Spurs. But if it's a bad knock that he took in training to that knee that he had operated on, then obviously it could be out for a bit longer.
So
but the idea that he was rested is just utter nonsense.
Well, I suppose they could say that technically it's right because he was probably on his sofa resting.
He didn't play because he was injured. Rested would suggest that he had the option of playing him if he wanted to, but chose not to. That decision was forced because his knee wasn't up to playing.
Why can't Klopp just say he's injured? We don't know what condition he's in. Or why this pretense of saying, "Oh, he's rested"? No, he's really fit. I mean, what is it? He doesn't want to give Brendan Rodgers' game plan going to change radically if Vidic is in there instead of Evans?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he wouldn't have played any attackers, would he? You know, it's because football's mad. Football's insane, and people in football are mad.
On that note, let's. Let's move down that motorway whose number, which number I can never remember, but runs from Liverpool to Manchester. The 60, M
62.
The M 62. There
Some
you
of
go.
Us still take these lengths roads.
All right. Is it more scenic?
When do you go from Liverpool to Manchester?
Oh, when do you go to Manchester? Yeah.
I mean, there's a ban in order forbidding me to go to Manchester.
James, I was struck by the fact that I thought. And especially watching the first half of that game, I thought to myself, right, is Mancini being ridiculously defensive here, or is it just a case that they can't get the ball off Arsenal's midfield? Was I barking up the wrong tree?
I don't think he was overly defensive, really. I just don't think, one, they played very well at all, and secondly, he just seems to be really, really wrestling with his team selection this season. He just really doesn't seem to know who to play when, and he's brought in obviously like four or five more players in the summer, and none of them are good enough to, or arguably good enough to improve the first team or say last season's best team. And yet obviously he feels obviously need to accommodate, you know, Sinclair and Maicon, Garcia, etc. And I just think City is suffering a bit, really, for a bit of chopping and changing. Mancini not quite sure, you know, what his best lineup is. They've chopped and changed with formation. Obviously, he's played three at the back. Yesterday was a sort of 4-3-1-2, come 4-4-2. Other times it's 4-2-3-1. It's the chopping and changing quite a lot. Tactically, and they just doesn't really seem to. They don't seem to have started this season with much of a cohesive plan.
I was asking why, though. Is it because he's making too many changes?
I mean, we'll have to ask Mancini that. But I mean, I don't know.
Assuming if Mancini knew, then he would just fix it rather than intentionally continuing to play badly.
Yeah, but I just don't understand why they have why there's been the dramatic change from the setup and the personnel that were outstanding for much of last season. You know, I mean, he's got it in his head that Lescott isn't very good on the ball, which may well be true, but Lescott had a rather good season last time around. And so that company, Lescott Axis, has been disrupted this season, and company actually seems to have been affected by it. Mike Richards is obviously injured, so there's been some chopping and changing at kind of right back. And then De Jong's gone, and he can't decide on the two he kind of wants in midfield in the absence of Gareth Barry, who's admittedly just kind of recent return from injury. And it's all a bit all over the place, to be honest. And I think, given that he's got a few injuries here and there, he's kind of needlessly changed too much too soon when he didn't need to.
Roy, are you on board with this, or are you of the party that says, actually, isn't it funny how when Sir Alex Ferguson rotates his squad, he's just rotating his squad, whereas when other people do it, then they don't know what their best 11 is, and they're chopping and changing? And
there is an element of that. I think James is right, though, that there's rotating your squad and having a style and a system that stays the same, which United broadly do, and Chelsea do, and you know Arsenal do.
Isn't it better to have multiple systems that you can throw?
It probably is,
opposition?
But only if your players are comfortable with them. Paul Lambert at Norwich last year changed system loads in the middle of games, and that's what got Norwich a lot of points. And
when
that worked.
And it worked. We call him Paul Lambert.
The Frenchman. Yeah. Just that's sophisticated. I agree with James. I think what Mancini has at the moment is a team that's not entirely certain with what it's meant to be doing. Loads of players who don't quite look like they're comfortable with their positions or their roles, and a team that, I don't know, City just look a bit somewhat, I think either Hughesy or Ducky described them today in the paper as being looking like they have a hangover, and they do. They look like they've got a title hangover. They just look a bit lackadaisical and a bit sort of, if I'm allowed to use slightly blue language, a bit half-arsed, to be perfectly honest.
Tony, would it have something to do with the fact that in their last game they went and were away from home against arguably the best team in the world, and they threw away a two-goal lead at the very end of the match, and maybe that might have a little hangover effect?
No, I think I think he's been groping tactically, for the whole of the season so far. I don't think he's quite sure where his best lineup is. I don't think he's sure.
There's nothing wrong with that, is it? Is it a bad thing to not know where your best lineup is?
Well, it is when it's affecting your results, Gab. I mean, quite badly, and the team and the players clearly seem to be affected by it. I take your point on. It's absolutely Mancini experimenting with having to play in three at the back is absolutely fine. It's good to have other options, but they literally have played about four different formations in six games or something so far, and the players feel like they're being dragged one way and then the other, and they don't really know what they're kind of doing. And it was just all a bit, here you go, lads, we'll chuck you out there, just work it out.
Whatever. We'll move on with this because I don't want to monopolize this, but the guy's trying to do something different. It doesn't work. It's an asymmetrical formation, right? He's got weird specialists for certain situations. Maicon's a specialist. Sinclair's a specialist. It may not be good. They may be playing badly. But surely, in and of itself, that's not a bad thing. I mean,
there's no structure to necessarily to kind of what he's doing. I would agree if there's two formations he was clearly kind of working on, one that involved three at the back and another system that maybe had four, fine. But there's been so many mutations in between that the players just don't really seem to know what's happening from one week to the next. They just looked a little bit lost, to be honest.
Moving to Arsenal, which I think a big part of the reason why things didn't work out was I thought Arsenal played very, very...
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Cross Wires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Very well. Now, when people put the point to me that, oh, but without Van Persie, they're better without Van Persie because they're not all focusing on him, I kind of said, all right, this is a load of cobblers because, you know, ultimately Van Persie is such a phenomenal player that. But now I'm starting to get my doubts. Is it a case that maybe when they play these wingers, you know, Podolski and whatnot, they work harder defensively, and that this Arteta Diaby situation is working for now because they don't have to do much defending in front of the back four because they have the ball all the time.
Yeah,
is this what's going on?
I think the balance is better without Van Persie. I mean, clearly he's a brilliant player, but you know it's. I think they bought well during the summer, and they've got a more structured team than they've had in the last five years, and I think they'll do much better this season.
But let's hang on a minute though. If Van Persie had played for Arsenal yesterday, they would have won that game. Arsenal played well. I don't dispute that. There was some terrific football. For the most part, they were very solid defensively, and they fashioned a hell of a lot of some very, very good chances. But the point is that they missed a number of very, very good chances with Jovino at the top. He missed two. Terrific kind of chances that Van Persie would have taken one of those, and equally, so that has long been Achilles' heel of Arsenal. You know, not enough ruthlessness in front of goal, which was evident again yesterday. And equally, the goal was another set piece. I mean, ball came over, Mignone just needlessly kind of came, got nowhere near it. Lescott rose above Koscielny and Podolski, I think it was, to head home. I mean, yes, Arsenal, from watching yesterday, looked like they were heading in the right direction, but their two big Achilles heels over the last however many seasons were evident again yesterday.
Roy, I'm dying to, you get the final verdict on this, because I think it's almost like an ideological battle. Is this, you know, in the past, I always looked at Arsenal and I thought they played fantastic football, and then it was very simple. Like, when they won, oh, they're fantastic. When they lost, they'd come out and be like, oh, well, they need Gary Cahill at the back. They have no cutting edge. They're soft southern fairies. Yeah. You are the sage. You get the verdict. Plus, I'm duty bound to be nice to you this week, because otherwise Skinner will make life very unpleasant.
We've been to HR about how Gab's been treating me.
So you get the final.
I get to decide.
Yes,
I'm more inclined. I think caution should be Arsenal's watchword to an extent. I think I saw them against Sunderland on the first day of the season, and they were poor. They just had no ideas. Things have obviously improved massively since then. Podolski settled down nicely. Cazorla looks like an excellent player. Interesting that Giroud has kind of been bumped out the side for Jovinho, who's not a strike, who's not an out-and-out striker, never has been. So that whole debate about Del Bosque in the summer sort of impacting Torres' confidence by choosing not to play a striker, that should logically now apply to Arsenal, who are sort of trying to experiment with a sort of semi-false nine in Jovinho. But there is signs of promise, and I think that teams can be liberated by losing their stars. I think that's definitely a factor.
Semi-false nine.
On that note,
you need to have a word, really, don't you? With all these phrases.
No, but I think that's kind of fair, isn't it? Jovinho's not playing as an out-and-out striker, is it?
Some might argue that Robin van Persie didn't play as an out-and-out striker last year either.
Yeah.
So there.
Fair point. Yeah.
All right, now in our debate, and I hope we take this all seriously in the spirit it was intended, Tony, I want to talk about what level of abuse, it's more of a moral and an ethical argument, I guess, what level of abuse is acceptable or can we live with in a football ground? Does it matter what areas of the ground it happens? And the reason I bring this up is, we've all paid to attend football at different stages in our life. We may not pay that often anymore, but when we go, you know, you hear banter, you hear insults directed at opposing players and opposing fans. There are basic rules in place right now. Racial abuse is not allowed. Homophobic abuse is not allowed. Sectarian abuse is not allowed. Although even then, you know, what's there? I don't quite get the definition of sectarian. I don't think that's very clear. What are we comfortable with? And I'll start with you, Tony, because I'm assuming you've been going to football longer than we have. And you probably saw it when the abuse was maybe worse than it is today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think, you know, I remember being at Anfield when, you know, we had 53,000 people making monkey noises at Clyde Best, you know, and I think it's changed, and it's changed so much for the better now, you know. So, I mean, I think possibly we get ourselves worked up into a bit of a state and saying, oh, you know, how terrible it is, and, you know, the things I said. I mean, to be honest, I think the most of the taboo areas are clear, you know, race, you know, that you don't do that. And I don't think it's that big an issue, really.
Well, I'm not trying to say I'm going to argue when abuse is targeted at an individual. Mm. But I was thinking more recently about, obviously, it was coming to the fore at the weekend, about the songs about Munich and the songs about Hillsborough. Mm. It seems to me that And this is there's a bit of a disconnect, because this seems to be endemic to European football and perhaps certain areas of South America. I don't know that there's any other sport in any other part of the world where you think, oh, look, to wind him up, you know, I'm going to go and make a joke about an airplane crashing in 1958, or, you know, oh, I'm going to remind you that, you know, 96 of your fellow supporters died because they were crushed to death in an overcrowded pen. It just seems like it just wouldn't cross anybody's mind, not necessarily because of it's so tasteless and offensive, but just because it's just such an inane thing to do.
Well, there's kind of an interesting dynamic. There's like a broader issue at stake, isn't there? That you say to people that chants about certain things are unacceptable in football grounds, and they will say, the people who defend the right to basically go into a football stadium and do whatever you like will say that you have to expect it. It's tribal. It's what's always happened. It's football. You know, people behave differently. It's a kind of a mob mentality. Of course, you wouldn't do it on the street, but it's different in the stadium. That seems to be the logic. That's basically people saying that once you're part of a football supporting crowd, you are not subject to the laws of human decency, and that you are essentially an uncontrolled animal who will just say all these things that come into your head. I don't understand at what point we kind of got to the stage where this argument existed where you were allowed to go into a stadium and say, right, you know what, those boundaries and those lines that we have outside of football stadiums, they don't apply anymore. I don't see why they don't apply. Swearing, I guess if you're kind of upset, you're angry and stuff, I can understand swearing. You hear people swear on the street. The basic rule, don't racially abuse anyone, don't issue homophobic abuse to anyone, although that's a much more grey area than racial abuse. And don't mock the dead. This isn't hard stuff. This isn't sort of complicated or controversial. That's basic sort of human decency.
Tucker?
I remember going to watch England, which is a rarity, admittedly, and being surrounded. Emil Heskey got on the ball, and there's a bloke about a couple of rows across from me who shouted, "Go on, you black bastard!" And in a really, and no one around him whatsoever batted an eyelid. And it wasn't said, not condoning it whatsoever, it wasn't said viciously, it wasn't whatever, he just kind of almost, just clearly just said it, probably came out without him even thinking about it. Whereas I've been in grounds and you stood around people who've done monkey noises, and you've got a lot of people looking around with looks of kind of disgust on the face. And there seems to be such a discrepancy in what a lot of people consider just to be banter or harmless or whatever, and those that consider to be, you know, really kind of vicious, you know, aggressive kind of aggressive behaviour.
Let me give you an example from yesterday, right? A song that you hear everywhere, I think Liverpool go, right? The song where you go, sign on with a pen in your hand, right? Is that acceptable?
I think it probably is, yeah. I think it is. I find it quite ironic to be at Anfield and listening to people from Portsmouth and Sunderland sing it. It's not like they're sort of zones of great economic prosperity, especially at the moment when there's a massive recession all over the country.
But even if you had a bunch of wealthy people singing it.
Right, so
you had Dave Cameron sitting there singing it. I mean, would that
be a vote winner, Gab. My problem with this is that I think generally in life, the rule is, as set out by South Park, that it's either all okay or none of it's okay. And it's where you draw a line that's a problem. So I find chants about Munich and Hillsborough disgusting and distasteful, and I can't understand how people do them.
Why do you find the chants about Munich disgusting? I mean, people die. Airplanes crash, right?
Yeah.
It's a fact of life.
But do you not find...
I mean, I'm not saying that they're not unpleasant or offensive, but... This happened in 1958, right? Most of the people on the ground weren't even alive back then. Most of the relatives of people who died weren't alive then. Those people could have died falling down the stairs.
I agree, and I think the reason
I wonder if to some degree, sometimes, and I get this sense, is a lot of the people who get so angry over these chants, and I agree with you, they are tasteless and they're violent, and I think for the people who were directly affected, there must be horrible. But a lot of other people, I think, walk around and just waiting for that Munich chant so I can get angry at them, or I'm just waiting for the Hillsborough chant so I can get really, really angry and wound up.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that probably what's universally true is the people who are getting really outraged and offended weren't alive. So, well, obviously weren't alive for Munich. A lot of them probably don't consciously remember Hillsborough. And I think a lot of the people doing the chants will be in their early 20s and don't remember either disaster and have no sort of concept. There's this you distance yourself as a human from these things, that from tragedies. That's natural, and they become something that doesn't have any emotional resonance with you. And that is what happens.
Are we making a bigger issue out of this, or should we go and just say these things are so out of bounds that, you know, we should treat them the same way we would treat somebody if they racially abuse a player or the like?
I think we are blown to our proportion. I mean, the reality is I haven't heard a Munich chant inside the grounds when Liverpool are playing for a long time inside the stadium. I think, you know, you hear it outside the stadium, you'll hear it in pubs. And when I was in Madrid a couple of years ago, I mean, there was a gang of lads singing Harold Shipman songs. And, you know, I was like... no, I'm not having this, you know, and had words with them. And, you know, and I think there's an element of self-policing with the fans. I mean, I think generally the people who do this, in my experience, are young, they're attention seekers, they want to show that they're, you know, they're, I mean, there's a few roles who do it, and, you know, the vermin, but it's such a small minority, really, and, you know, and I think to blow it up and start, you know, I mean, they were talking about last week when at United they were singing Always the Victims, It's Never Your Fault, get them on CCTV and ban them. Well, for why? You know, it's like, all right, yeah, I know that there is an undercurrent aimed at Hillsborough for that, but, you know, you can't convict them, you can't ban them. And in the light of the Hillsborough Independent Panel, they just look like flat earthers. And so let's treat it with the contempt it deserves, and let's not make a big issue of it. Football fans have a bad enough reputation, and this blows up a small thing into a massive thing.
The issue with Hillsborough particularly is not what Manchester United fans saying or any other fans saying. The issue with Hillsborough is the 23 years of cover-up by the authorities in this country. Man United fans singing Always the Victim, Never Your Fault at Anfield, as they allegedly did yesterday after the game in response to aeroplane gestures. That's bad, and it's distasteful, and it doesn't suggest that they are people who should be looked at as moral arbiters of this country. But they haven't denied anyone justice for 23 years. Do you know what I mean? It's important we don't lose sight of it.
Sticks and stones.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, I've heard, when I went to Elland Road as a kid, I heard and saw.
Yeah, but that's Leeds. Come on,
Munich. So I know you can't say that's Leeds. Munich songs and aeroplane gestures when United weren't there. I thought the weirdest thing about football I find is clubs singing about songs that aren't there when their game's not on telly. Who cares? Are you watching Manchester? No, it's not on television. Why would they search out a Leeds game to watch?
You get that
ridiculous.
You get that a lot of London grounds.
Yeah, it's
Spurs.
Pathetic. Yeah, are you Spurs singing about Chelsea when it's sort of a 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday and it's Wigan? Who cares? Just support your team.
Yeah, I also think it's, you know, just, you know, talking about, like, you know, the Dole song. I remember when it cost 28 quid to get in at Chelsea, and like, so you come down to London, it's cost me like 25 quid, 30 quid on the train, 28 quid to get in, and there was like all these Chelsea fans opposite with wads of cash, going loads of money, and I'm like, you know, I've just spent tons, and you're waving.
I think, Tony, I would expect that those Chelsea fans were assuming that you snuck onto the train without paying your ticket, and then later bunked into the ground. I think that's why they were doing that.
Yeah, well, possibly, but, you know, I mean, it's.
I don't think they imagined that you took, like, the, you know, the first class advance fare from Liverpool Lime Street down, and that, you know, you were going to go stay at the Grosvenor House Hotel that night.
An interesting fact about Tony Evans is that he has never been in standard class on a train. He only travels first class with his own personal butler.
We need to move on here because smoke is starting to come out of Chris Skinner's ear. I don't know if we solved any moral maze here, but at least Rory got to reveal that Tony Evans has a personal butler. All right, time now for some quick hits. John Terry is retiring from England duty. Tony, I get the fact that there's a lot to do with his upcoming hearing, which by the time you listen to this podcast might have been resolved. But if that's the case, why didn't he quit when he was charged or quit after his last England appearance? And what impact will this have on the Three Lions?
Who knows what goes on inside the mind of John Terry, if indeed there is a mind. I don't think it'll have much of an impact at all. I think he was going to get retired anyway very, very soon by his by the fact that he's slowing down. And you know, I think his time as an England player was coming to a rapid end.
I just find it remarkable how few players seem to attract as much universal loathing as John Terry. Everton are third in the table, Ducker. On Saturday, they beat everybody's darling Swansea. Are you ready to go out on a limb and start talking Champions League for the Toffee Men?
Unfortunately not. I would dearly love to see them in the Champions League. I think they're a very, very good team. I think 1-11, they are good enough to get there, but the squad, unfortunately, isn't. And I think one or two injuries to key players or general fatigue over the course of the season will prevent them from a top four finish, but I'd still expect them to get in the top six, possibly seven.
Rory, Tony Pulis was furious after his team fell at Chelsea 1-0. He had a go at Ivanovic and Oscar, urged the media to highlight those who dive and cheat, and added, "This is England. We're playing in England, not in Europe." Rory, you're a notorious little Englander. Are you on board with this whole cheating foreigners thing? Or can you perhaps name a couple English players who also enjoy the occasional tumble? In fact, I can think of one guy who likes to handle the ball in the opposing box, not once, but twice, score a goal, and then smile about it afterwards.
You mean Peter Crouch?
Yes.
And you also mean his strike partner, Michael Owen, who's a player who's not afraid of a dive. The idea that foreigners dive and English players don't is ridiculous. The fact that we're still upset about diving is equally ridiculous. It's the 21st century. Players will do anything for an advantage. If you dive well, it should be celebrated.
West Brom are also up in third place alongside that team in blue we mentioned before, but I won't mention again because I don't want to upset you, Tony. Is it Steve Clark's genius? Is it a very well-run club? Is it perhaps a bit of good luck early in the season, given that they really haven't played too many good sides? Or just why are they third in the table?
Well, I mean, who saw that coming? I think it's a combination of all those things. I think I didn't expect Steve Clark to have such an impact in management. So it's another one sacked by Liverpool at the beginning of the summer. I think it is a well-run club in the sense that, they don't spend a lot of money. They keep things tight there. And I think they've sort of had easy fixtures like Liverpool at home. I don't think we'll see them up there at the end of the season. But you know what? Good luck to them.
All right, one word answer. If you could swap Brendan Rodgers for Steve Clark right now, would you do it?
No.
All right. Southampton hammer Villa 4-1, and Ricky Lambert, as us Europhiles like to call him, nails another two goals. Ducker, I won't ask you about Lambert in England because everyone tells me that that ship has sailed, but can you break him down and tell me just why he's one of the top goal scorers in the Premier League right now?
Well, I mean, he spent his entire career in the Football League, likes of Stockport and Rochdale, Bristol before joining Southampton. Just looks to me like a player who has been waiting for this moment for a long time, and he also, from what I've seen, admittedly haven't seen a lot of him before, looks a very good finisher.
Great finisher, maybe not exactly the quickest player out there. Maybe that's why he's been overlooked in the past. Tottenham endured a horrible first half, only to come back and win against Reading 2-1. Quite the roller coaster for AVB, who was booed at halftime and celebrated big time at the end. Rory, you wrote about the great man in Monday's paper. Tell us more.
Yeah, it's an interesting afternoon for Villas-Boas. He's got this uneasy relationship with Spurs' fans, who I don't think really wanted him at the start, and they're going to take a lot of winning over. When Defoe scored and when the final whistle went, Villas-Boas was, he sort of had a fit in terms of celebrations. It was this frenzied, manic celebration. It meant a lot. That first win was really important. It's going to help win the fans over. I think he's learnt a lot, Villas-Boas, from his time at Chelsea. Not only does he no longer crouch on the sidelines, he is also playing a system that suits his players. He's shown a bit of tactical awareness. The team, they look decent, Spurs. I think they'll be all right. And with Stefan Freund next to him, he has probably the most frightening man in the world.
I love the fact that I went to Spurs v Lazio and I asked him a question about Lazio and he just launched into like a 3-minute tactical analysis. This guy played here, that guy played there, and we countered with this and that, which is absolutely perfect. And I absolutely loved. And you could tell he absolutely loved saying it. And afterwards, I joked with one of our colleagues, Henry Winter, like, oh, that question for the foreign press. Nobody in England wants to read that stuff. And I thought, like, yeah, you're probably right.
Well, and here's one for you, Gab. Between them, the Milan clubs have played 8 home matches this season. How have they been getting on? And I imagine not very well, otherwise you wouldn't have written this question for me to ask you.
That's exactly right. They have won 0. That's 0 wins out of 8 for the two Milan clubs. Now, they have a new pitch at the San Siro, which is partly artificial, but that's got nothing to do with it. The real answer is that they are just very, very bad. AC Milan lost their best players. They replaced them with bad players, simply put, and stupid players who get themselves foolishly sent off, like Kevin Prince-Boateng and Philip Mexis. Inter Milan, they've got their head where the sun doesn't shine right now, and they're trying different solutions, having a weird mixture of youth and older players. It's just not taking off for them. Big difference between the two is the Inter manager will be given time. Allegri, I'm not sure. That's it for this week. It's been fun. Come find us on Twitter to share your thoughts or email gamepodcast@thetimes.co.uk. You can also go to our website where you'll find the news, the gossip, your analysis. And on Mondays, a triple dose of Rory K. Smith. You get his blog. You get his web chat. You get his appearance on the Game Podcast. What could be better? That's why Mondays are everybody's favorite day of the week. Also, my excellent column is also in there on Mondays as well. Thanks to my guests, James Ducker, Tony Evans, and of course Rory Kay. Till next week. Bye-bye.
train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.